Dear friends and fellow students, we have gathered here together today to honor the memory of our beloved teacher, our revered guru, Dingli Mei, known in this lifetime as Edwin John Dingle, founder of the science of mental physics, the International Church of the Holy Trinity in Los Angeles, and this beautiful spiritual haven here in Yucca Valley. To wing him on his way to the light of everlasting life and to the final awakening. Let us all, at this instant, let us all together be still in his stillness, remembering the first two laws that we learned in the science of mental physics, to be happy, and to give thanks. Remembering this, let us then be still in his stillness.
I read to us first chapter of St. John, verses 1 to 14. One of the favorite passages of Dingli Mei's that I'm sure many of us heard him read many times and refer to the cryptic, mystic meaning of these words. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and the life was the light of man. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God, whose name was John. The same came for a witness, to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. That was the true light, which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. He came into his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them gave he the power to become the sons of God. Even to them that believe on his name. Was are born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth.
Thank you, Reverend Thorson. Now, friends, as Reverend Thor brought to our attention, this was one of our teacher's favorite passages. It deals with the creative word. The creative word. Our teacher taught us that words have great power. Tremendous power. And that we live in a world of words. His wisdom, our teacher's wisdom, reflected the truth in the most positive way. Through books, through lessons, through phonograph records, through tape recordings, the wise words of our beloved teacher taught us the art of living. Being a gifted speaker and writer, Dingley May pointed out on many occasions that the greater or the deeper the feeling, the more difficult it is to portray in words. How well I know that this is true. My desire at this moment is to be able to express the very highest and the deepest feeling of love, the overwhelming gratitude, the great respect and honor we wish to express to and for our beloved teacher. I say we because I know that the many tens of thousands of students all over the world and all of us here express that feeling. If we had words to express them, we feel them in our hearts. For what words could possibly convey our feelings for a man who not only brought us into greater knowledge and understanding of self, our own individual self, but led us into a realization of and a communion with the Lord of Lords, that men call God. How wonderful it is, and how grateful we are in our feeling. Many times, in his great lesson, the Holy of Holies, our Dingley May taught us to look to nature, observe, learn from nature. Let us today look to nature. You see, everything moves in cycles. And let us consider what is termed to be his life in the cycle of our four seasons: spring, summer, autumn, winter. Spring, what a wonderful word that is, isn't it? A time of birth. Our Edwin John Dingle was born in Paignton, Devonshire, England, in 1881. His mother passed on in his birth. And his father made his transition when Dingle May was at the age of 9. Now, there was a time when it seemed that he and his older brother would be sent to an orphanage. His grandmother refused to allow this and took the two boys to raise. Most students in the science of mental physics, but particularly any student who has ever attended one of Dingle May's conventions, they know how deeply he revered and loved his grandmother. Her care and love was one of the most precious things in his life, for which he was most grateful. And he let us know this many times. Whenever he was in need of discipline, his grandmother would send him up to his bedroom to meditate upon a quotation by Tennyson. And this quotation became his lifelong motto. And I now quote it. "The conditions of conquest are easy. We have but to toil a while, endure a while, believe always, and never turn back." Following the custom, Edwin John and his brother served an apprenticeship, the printing and kindred trades, since their father and their uncle were both newspaper men. But the love and sacrifices of his grandmother for him inspired Edwin John to become a success. So he worked very hard. Having been an orphan, it was his desire to go out into the world and to make a fortune so that he could aid other orphans who had no home nor loved ones who were not as fortunate as he. Later, Dingle May's dream of helping orphans was expanded, enlarged, and merged with his commitment to help humanity by teaching men and women, God's children, the children of God, how to help themselves through his teachings in the science of mental physics. His desire to help, his desire to found orphanages may yet become a reality, has become a reality in other areas, because his dreams and his goals have become the dreams and the goals of countless thousands of other human beings throughout this earth who have done great things because of his inspiration and who have dedicated themselves to the betterment of humanity through love and through service. And our teacher never ceased to admonish us. Service was the most glorious of all activities. Service to our fellow human beings. Now we come to the summer of our teacher's life. Just as the golden wheat grows taller in the summer sun, our teacher grew. We find our Edwin John maturing, becoming a man, beginning to dream his dreams. Having mastered his trade, he accepted a position on the Singapore Straits Times. Later, he became the editor. While actively engaged in the busy life of a newspaper man and editor, seeking the adventures of life, our young Edwin John Dingle was also in the quest of knowledge. His spiritual thirst led him to a man known as the Sage of Singapore, who became his first spiritual guide, laying the foundation for his ultimate quest in Tibet. Now, to tell our young adventurer that something could not be done or had never been done only increased his determination to accomplish it. China, for the most part, at this time, was a place of mystery, of fascination to the Western world, but mystery. Intrigued by the challenge of mysterious China, young Edwin John Dingle decided to undertake a journey across China. Since there was no public transportation of any kind, he would walk, mapping the territory, rivers, boundaries, and of course, being a newspaper man, reporting the adventure to readers all over the world. His companion on this adventure was an Australian newspaper man who found early in the trip that the going was too rough, and so he turned back. But our young adventurer, well schooled in the way of conquest, he pressed on. He would not turn back. And along with the aid of his Chinese guides, he continued his journey. His reports and books about this adventure made him a well-known author. His maps and geographical exploration earned him a fellowship in the Royal Geographical Society of Great Britain and other kindred international societies. Now, since there were so few sources where one could gain even the meagerest facts about China, Dingle decided he would enlighten the Western world, that he would compile all of the information that he had gleaned, and he would continue through others, help from others, and that he would make an atlas and gazetteer, including in it all information on commerce, agriculture, mineral deposits, geographical information, and many maps. You see, at that time, the maps were very poor and inaccurate. Each province had its own language, so to speak, or dialect. And he made the first standardized maps, bilingual, in Chinese and English. Now, when he saw backing from bankers for this great undertaking, they said it could not be done. The project was too big. You know what this did to our teacher? It made his determination and inspiration even greater to accomplish it. It took 12 years to compile and edit the information, but the book was an immediate success. The information contained in Dingle's new atlas and commercial gazetteer of China was not only in immediate demand, but the information was still current and vitally essential to our own country during the period of World War II. The book, by the way, was only one of seven either written or edited and published by our teacher while in the Orient. And it was the largest book ever published to that time in China. It was his pilgrimage into Tibet that proved to be the most important, because it was in Tibet that he learned his mission, his real destiny. Time does not permit the explanation of all of the circumstances of how he was led in his travels to Tibet and lived for some time in a Tibetan monastery. There, he was privileged to study under a most remarkable Tibetan master.
under the tutelage of his Tibetan guru, Dingleme was made spiritually aware of the truths of life. His master, speaking to him just before his departure from Tibet, prophesied, "There will come a time in your life, my son, when nothing will satisfy you but to teach." Years later, in the autumn of his life, he recalled the predictions of his master in Tibet, as the urge to teach could no longer be denied. A wonderful feeling, an urge to teach. The autumn of Dingleme's life must have seemed, well, just that. Still a young man, his fortune made, he could indeed reap the harvest of his endeavors. In 1921, he came to the United States. He had been told by his doctors in China prior to his departure that in 6 months he would be totally blind. He was already blind in one eye, and the other eye was rapidly failing. And so the first thing that Dingleme did upon arrival in the United States was to go into seclusion upon Mount Rainier. And through a practice divulged to him by his Tibetan master in strictest secrecy, Dingleme regained his sight completely. His sight restored, he settled in Oakland, California. Never the type to remain idle, he wrote inspirationally and lectured on his travels. His lecturing led to a request by the New York Psychical Society to lecture on his pilgrimage to Tibet. And after he had lectured, 7 people came up and asked him to teach them. Dingleme agreed, and the number of students grew. And Dingleme founded the science of mental physics in 1927, as he realized that the prediction of his beloved master in Tibet had finally come to pass, that nothing would satisfy him but to teach. Returning to the West Coast, Dingleme began to lecture and to hold classes down in the old Trinity Auditorium downtown, until the need for a permanent headquarters and more space became apparent, and then our present international headquarters at 213 South Hobart Boulevard and our church was acquired. 1934. At this time, the Institute of Mental Physics and our church were incorporated as a nonprofit organization under the laws of the state of California. During the first decade of Dingleme's ministry, he relied upon personal and class teaching. The second decade, laying the foundation, the home study division was added. In spite of the fact that these were the Deep Depression years, the home study division grew. And today, over 214,000 students have been enrolled, some of whom, by the way, have come great distances to be here with us today. And we are happy and we are grateful to have all of you who with us will pay tribute and honor our beloved teacher. During this period, Dingleme taught and lectured regularly. He personally conducted 3 classes a week in the evenings, as well as counseling, attending to the many administrative duties at the Institute and church. And in spite of this heavy schedule, he continued to write lessons on the higher teachings that he had received in Tibet. Dingleme became a naturalized American citizen, the country of his choice, in 1941. And that same year, in 1941, he was inspired to acquire land here in Yucca Valley. His plan, to build the model city of brotherly love and to provide a spiritual home for home study students and others where they could come and receive personal instructions in the science of mental physics and to train teachers. At that time, Yucca Valley was open desert, open range, cattle all over the place. The growth of this area brought to fore the feeling of everyone else, I think, that has come up into this beautiful valley. When Dingamay first came up here, he felt something. He had a feeling about the area, and so he acquired the land here. Confirmation on the spiritual qualities of this high desert area have come from many spiritual and occult groups who have proclaimed that this area is a chosen place in the New Age. Dingamay's heavy schedule was enlarged to allow the supervision of the construction of all the building projects here at our new city. Because he felt a sacred trust had been placed in him by the supporting student body. And so he personally governed all phases of our building programs. As both the student body and the city grew, Dingamay recognized the need of trained teachers to assist in the personal classes and conventions and to establish future cities of mental physics throughout the world.